What are the myths and stereotypes about incarcerated youth?
I'm Claire Compton, and I am the executive director of Freeverse. I think we have a lot of ideas about what incarcerated youth or at-risk youth are or what they look like. And often I think that plays to the trope of anger or poverty or sadness, but I think in reality, what we see are kids that have layers of struggles, and whether that's struggles in school or struggles with their family or struggles with poverty, that there aren't enough protective factors there.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the Western United States. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio. I'm Sarah Aronson, talking with Claire Compton, Nicole Gomez, and Taylor White of the Freeverse Project, voices from Montana's juvenile detention centers. You won't want to miss this.
I would also add that I was prepared for a very unruly environment. There was talk of the red button in the classroom, that if things went awry or got chaotic, that could be, you know, sprinted over to and bopped or something. Not only has that red button never come up, I do not know where it is, and I'm a woman in an environment that's often all male. And I'm not sure I can say that about most environments that I'm in, that I wouldn't appreciate knowing where that red button is. So I think that, to Claire's point, the stereotype that I was most surprised and happy to see proven wrong is that it's an environment of anger. It is not a violent place full of violent people in any means. It's actually a place of kindness and more gratitude than I'm used to seeing out of youths, or I displayed as a youth. So I would say it's actually an impressive place of calm.
What's your name?
My name is Taylor.
And what do you do at Freeverse?
I am the Missoula Program Director.
Can I add on to what you were saying too?
Yeah.
I think the students are so ready to share, many of them, not all of them, to share their lives, because I think it's a place that we open it up to wanting to know more about them, and I don't know that they always get those opportunities, and they're just so ready and excited to share who they are.
And for the listeners, I'll just explain that you're the Missoula-based Freeverse program, but you share a relationship with a larger program, Beat Within, founded in San Francisco. And I was hoping you could just describe the origination of Freeverse in Montana, and including your locations.
Yeah, so the Freeverse Project was started by Sarah Kahn, who is a MFA nonfiction graduate. It began with her and two other MFA candidates, and they just wanted to volunteer as a summer volunteer program back in 2014. Very quickly, she realized that if she wanted to keep going in there and she wanted to recruit other people who were qualified to do that, she needed to have some grounding in funding and attracting and maintaining relationships with committed teachers and writers. In 2016, Freeverse became fiscally sponsored by the Missoula Writing Collaborative. Now we're in Billings, in the Juvenile Detention Center out there, and in Ted Lechner Youth Services Center. And we make regular trips out to Pine Hills Youth Correctional Center in Miles City, which is an 8-hour drive away and the only long-term youth center in Montana. And it's for boys. Our girls go to Idaho.
And from the website, it reads, "Our goal is to one day have teachers in every hall in Montana. Our dream is to shut down our organization because there are no halls left." And I wanted to know, what do you mean by the dream of having no halls left?
Ideally, we wouldn't need to incarcerate young people. Ideally, we would have enough services and protective factors in place that when kids got in trouble, maybe they didn't get in trouble in the ways that they are now, and we could find alternate ways of handling those situations. I think that our dream is to have systems in which young people have options.
And just for clarification, what do you mean when you say protective factors?
So there's been so many studies on why some kids get into trouble and others don't. A lot of young people are doing the same things, and certain groups are getting caught for those things or punished for those things. So we see family connections, friend connections, school connections, extracurricular activities as protective factors. After-school programs are a big thing for keeping kids safe.
Yeah, as complicated as the issue is and as nuanced as the individual lives are, one of the hardest things to prepare new teachers for is to walk out of the incredibly homogenous white world of Montana into the most diversity that they will see for weeks and the most color they will see for weeks. It's kind of a bizarre thing to wrap your head around that there are so many complex factors at play, but when you walk into the center, it often does not feel complex. It feels stark.
Taylor, I'm so glad you brought up teaching because I want to get there next. But before we do, I just want to introduce the students' voices. So, Nicole, I was hoping you would read a tiny little poem from Commissary Notes.
Okay. I feel like an ant climbing a mountain. I feel like a tiny toy plane. I feel like a penny in a fountain, like a tiny drop of rain.
So in terms of the lessons you teach, one is to have students write an apology poem modeled after William Carlos Williams' This Is Just to Say. You also have lesson plans based on the rapper-musician Frank Ocean, as well as Greek and indigenous creation myths. And I wanted to know, what does it mean to hold the polarity of lessons grounded in traditional literary form while also pulling from these modern representations? And how do the students respond?
I really enjoy the privilege of getting to teach kids who have not been confident in a traditional class setting or perhaps felt valid in a classroom setting. And so it gives me a level. I love bringing in modern influences because it gives me a level of play that shows, when I'm succeeding in that, I hope, shows the students that they are a part of this conversation. For me, it's not so much that I am married to the modern, unfortunately, but I'm not bringing it in because I feel any particular tie to Frank Ocean, but it is important to me to know who the kids are listening to, how I can explain to them what a slant rhyme is using their own favorite influences, and show them that they're a part of this conversation. So for me, it's not so much a technique as just an excitement around showing kids that they are so much a part of this dialogue and informing this dialogue.
I'm Nicole Gomez. I'm a teacher with Freeverse. I want to jump in on this too, because I think this actually speaks a little bit to your earlier question as well about stereotypes of incarcerated youth, because I think that when I approach my lesson plans and I think about combining both modern and more classic literary influences or approaches, I'm thinking of my lesson plans with these kids the same way that I thought about my lesson plans. I taught teenagers for the last 10 years, non-incarcerated teenagers, and I find them to be very, very similar. Their teenagers are teenagers. And I think that by employing or including modern approaches and modern influences, not only is it like an accessibility question, but it's also a matter of creating something so that they let you in, capturing their interest. Because I think that one of the challenges that we face is that so often, you know, we don't know if we're going to be starting over with a whole new batch of faces and we're going to have to start from square one, or we don't really know. So in a very short amount of time, in 40 minutes or so, you need to accomplish this breakthrough with a bunch of kids, a bunch of teenagers who aren't by their nature predisposed to wanting much to do with you. And so by presenting something that they can connect to, that's something that belongs to modern pop culture or whatever they're interested in, it's a kind of way to slip in so that maybe they let you in. And then you can go on with the rest of your lesson. And it's the same approach that I used with other teenagers as I use with the ones here.
I want to ruminate a little bit on what you kind of mentioned really quickly about something belonging to pop culture or to the modern generation or the next generation. And I think it's that sense of belonging, of ownership, that this is a shared language or a shared way of expressing oneself that I think the more modern pieces integrated into, you know, classic texts can create that bridge to accessibility. Of course, they're all in conversation with each other anyway.
I have two publications in front of me, I Am Montana and Commissary Notes. Claire, would you be willing to read part of the foreword to I Am Montana?
I Am Montana is a project born of dichotomy. At its center, an image, a small patch of concrete, nestled below the spectacular mountain peaks of western Montana, separated by the metal crosses of chain-linked fence, the only outdoor space allotted to a group of adolescents who got in trouble. This anthology aims to reconcile these two worlds. On one side, the open spaces and big sky for which Montana is famous. On the other, the lived experiences of young people in detention. When we give these kids who are locked out of so much of what makes Montana what it is, the chance to reflect on their lives in this place, they consistently offer profound insight into our state, what it is like to be a part of it, and what parts of it exist that might not be visible to all.
There's an emphasis on visibility, and I wanted to know what the relationship is between incarceration, visibility, and someone's sense of humanity.
I think as humans, we all have a need to be seen and heard. I think one of the most powerful things that you can do is look somebody in the eye and tell them that you hear what they're saying and what they're saying is valid.
It's such a huge idea to try to address because visibility becomes very clear in that classroom. It's a cinder block walled classroom with no windows. So you do enter a space that feels, even as a temporary visitor, to be completely shut off from the rest of the world. And it's a muzzling experience. And I think that's part of the reason that it's such a joy to write in that space. But again, when you see the population, it feels like a larger issue of who's heard and who isn't. And that is not something I'm qualified to address. But the issues of visibility and voice in our country become so clear in that classroom. And that is a humbling and difficult and frustrating experience. But it is also an incredibly hopeful place. Kids burst into song. We've had duets written between classes and then performed. And then we've had other classes where no one wants to write a word.
Being visible means being connected humanly. That's what I get from writing and reading is connecting to other humans at a fundamental level. Yeah, I hope at the very least we can help one kid not feel alone.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a conversation with Claire Compton, Nicole Gomez, and Taylor White of the Freeverse Project. Voices from Montana's juvenile detention centers. I'm Sarah Aronson. This is The Right Question. Our full conversation can be found online at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook.
There is a reoccurring theme I found in the works, which is about Montana as a place. Big sky country, the last best place, the treasure state. And yet I imagine to those incarcerated, it doesn't feel anything like those titles. And I was wondering what themes you notice about people's relationship to Montana.
I will say that I think that even when our students are incarcerated, they still feel that connection to their home places. One of my favorite pieces that was written in one of my classes was this girl wrote about her home place. And in doing so, held the beauty of this place in tandem with the the poverty and hardship and fear that a lot of the people living there have. And she did this in such a way that she owned that place still. And she clearly has a love for it. And the ability to do that as a high schooler is profound, to hold those two sides of your home place together and still find love there.
I was sort of hoping one of you might read the poem Treasure State.
Treasure State. Montana is not perfect. Drugs are sold, guns are held in the palm of the unknown. The poor live on the streets they call home, and the rich live in a sheltered home they call a place, an option. But the people, we the people, know that Montana is a place of beautiful land, peacefulness, tribal connections, a place of average well-being community, a place to walk, a place to see, a place to feel your emotions flow through your body. That was written by T.
It sort of takes me to the foreword of Commissary Notes. Nicole, I was wondering if you'd be willing to introduce us to that body of work.
Of course. This project, which began under the guidance of Professor Katie Kane and in conjunction with the Humanities Action Lab, examined the history of Montana and its place in American westward expansion, as well as Montana's relationship to the doctrine of manifest destiny. These are histories that underpin contemporary practices of incarceration in the United States, such as the detention of immigrants and the separation of families at the border. Specifically, we wondered how Montana's history of segregation and incarceration, from Native reservations and boarding schools to juvenile detention centers and prisons, made possible the myth of the West that manifest destiny promised to early colonial settlers at the expense of Native people, an idea that is still at stake in the national imaginary.
These are really big ideas. And I wanted to know, what is the value of connecting these larger systemic structures and historical movements with one individual youth's story? And how is it helpful to them and the community in which they exist to address them in writing?
That's a really big question. I do want to incorporate Claire into that because she was more involved in the actual development of this than I was. But, I mean, I think that it's another approach similar to the I Am Montana journal that connects something that is a larger idea, a larger problem, a larger historical trend, something that's studied or examined at higher, more academic levels, and draws it down into the actual voices of the people that are experiencing it and living it. And especially, I think that also connects back to the question of visibility. What are the words and who are the individuals that these trends are coming down on in 2020 in our particular community?
I agree with what you're saying. And I also, you know, nobody thinks that they're a part of history. Nobody, we're just all living our lives and trying to make do as best we can. I think there's an academia thing in which we have a narrative and things either contribute to that narrative or don't, and the things that contribute to that narrative are what we focus on. And I think that, yes, it's lending voices to this larger narrative, but I think the other piece of it is that it challenges it in some ways. I think these lived experiences are part of that history, but they're also real complex lives with their own joys and tragedies and excitements. So I think being able to dive into something more complex than the academic narrative is important. And I think hearing these kids is important.
The word resistance came to my mind. Is that part of what you're talking about? Is sort of acknowledging a genocide and also the voice, the outliers or the voices of resistance or the ways that story doesn't have to be the only narrative?
Right. And actually, what you said reminded me of Tommy Orange, and he said in there, he wrote, "Don't you dare call us resilient. Would you," something, I'm going to butcher it, but something like, "Would you call a attempted murder victim resilient?" I like the word resistance, that it resists that narrative, that survival narrative, that academic kind of cold idea of players in a game or players in a story.
Maybe we'll let the student work speak for itself. Taylor, would you read a poem from the section called Montana Inside? The poem's called I Am From.
I Am From. I'm from the drugs and playing with the bugs. I'm from playing in the mountains and always shouting. I'm from the ponderosa pines, not the jungle vines. I'm from the meth lab and the Ford crew cab. I'm from the big sky and always getting high. I'm from the two-story house and wandering all around. I'm from the dark nights, just sitting there trying to take flight. I'm from the bottle, causing Dad to go wide open throttle. I'm from the drugstore snacks to the long naps. I'm from the place that has the meth project pace. I'm from the number one suicidal state with a million ranch gates. And that was written by D.
When I read that poem, the end of it is just arresting. And in my own work with teenagers, I have found that they can skewer to the heart of the truth. And in this case, wealth disparity at the end. And I was wondering, what can we learn from teenagers?
I don't know. I think that with from teenagers, yes, you can learn sincerity. You can learn sort of how quickly the bravado will disappear if they feel like somebody's really listening to them. And with a word of encouragement, how they'll speak louder and more. I don't know. I think there's so much to learn from them. And I also think that working with Freeverse, you know, I've been in Montana for a year and a half now, so really I'm new here, and I think that I've learned so much from them about sides of Montana and parts of Montana that I would have had no idea of, and I certainly had no idea of when I got here. So, you know, they have this whole world, and I think that that's something that we get at sometimes in lessons about the rules of the world that they know and that they come from, and they know a lot, and they know, I think teenagers everywhere, in whatever circumstances they come from, know how to survive according to the rules of their situation. And so I think that you can learn those from them and learn the ways in which they understand the world, their world.
I have experienced so much truth in that classroom. I think that it also has been a humbling experience in learning that the number one thing you can do as a teacher to alienate those kids is to treat them like kids. They are survivors. They are resisting a million factors all at once. They are incredible in their ability to distill truth from all of these big ideas that we're talking about that we can hardly wrap our own tongues around. They sit down to the page and write a line like the number one suicidal state with a million ranch gates and turn it into you humbly and then look at their feet. It's been a lesson in truth.
I think teenagers are hilarious. I just like being around them. They're funny. They see things in funny ways. Like one of my favorite moments was Nicole was there. We watched this Justin Timberlake music video for Man of the Woods. And the kid's response was, that was whack. It was the best thing. Because then we could go like, okay, why? After hilarity ensued, that like automatic response, not having the filter, being able to just express how you feel in such unambiguous clarity. I loved it.
At the end of Commissary Notes, founder Sarah Kahn has written a bit about what it means to be published. And she shares an anecdote about the value of these students seeing their work in print. And I wanted to know for you, what have you witnessed when students are able to see their narratives or their reputations in a good way, in a positive way, and to receive recognition?
I do know that I just brought Commissary Notes into the detention center last week, and when I like set it on the table, the kids all jumped up and attacked it to look through the pages and connect with the artwork, and they just got really excited about seeing the work of their peers. And you know, it's a beautiful journal, and they were just excited to see that. So I think that just the sheer excitement, I mean, as a writer, many of us are writers, we're all writers, it's very exciting to see yourself in print. And so, I mean, there's no different for them. The other thing, too, that I think on the trip last year out to the long-term correctional facility, Pine Hills and Miles City, I think that this actually wasn't, it wasn't a question of being published, but the last day was a three-day trip that we were out there for, and on the last day we had a songwriting workshop. One of the kids brought back in a song that he'd written overnight that was inspired by a lesson that we had had the day before. And he brought it in and sang it for us. It was really exciting to see his commitment to that, but it was honestly, it was more exciting to see all the other kids congratulate him and applaud him for the work that he'd done, and to see the smile that spread across his face when he was cheered on by his peers. So I think that that sort of validation of talent and of merit and of worth and of having created something, in especially in circumstances like that where they need that maybe even more than most.
My last question is, what are the levels of involvement for Freeverse, and how can people support your good work?
We have social media. Invite everyone to like our Facebook page and our Instagram and share. I think we're talking about visibility a lot. As much as we can share our students' work and get their stories out there. The I Am Montana anthology is available for purchase at Fact and Fiction in Missoula, This House of Books in Billings, and also on Amazon.
Commissary Notes is also available for purchase at Fact and Fiction and online at cutbankonline.org. And the proceeds all go towards ordering more copies of Commissary Notes to get into the hands of the kids.
So there's also a donation portal on our website.
It sounds silly, but even liking our posts, even following our page, buying the book, it's been really exciting to get more of a platform in the last few years. I used to fear that that our words were empty when we said people are listening, people care. And any tiny gesture goes such a long way, because it's difficult to even express what a joy it is to show the kids and tell the kids that it's not just me. It's not just Claire. It's not just Nicole.
People want to hear their stories. People want to read their stories and listen to their testimony.
Claire Compton is the executive director of Freeverse. She's pursuing an MA in English teaching at the University of Montana. Nicole Gomez teaches at Freeverse and is an MFA candidate at the University of Montana. She's also the online content co-editor for Cutbank. Taylor White holds a Master of Fine Arts degree from the University of Montana and is Freeverse's most senior teacher. Look for more information about them and their work at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and visit our Facebook page. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting us since 2008. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Sarah Aronson, and this has been The Right Question.
The Right Question is produced by Sarah Aronson, Beth Ann Austin, studio engineer and production assistant. The music in this program was written and performed by John Floridis.